contractor is killed in a rocket attack targeting Iraq's Ain al-Assad airbase that hosts American forces. Iran's president says the standoff over the 2015 nuclear deal can be resolved easily if the U.S. lifts all sanctions against Tehran. Also in the headlines, Russia says it will take reciprocal steps in a way that best serves its interests, response to U.S. and EU sanctions. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mias. Thanks for joining us. Rockets have hit Ain al-Assad airbase in western Iraq, which hosts foreign forces, including U.S. troops. The U.S. says 10 rockets targeted the base, with security sources reporting the death of a contractor. There is no immediate claim of responsibility. Also on Wednesday, a roadside bomb hit a logistic convoy of the U.S.-led coalition forces in the southern city of Samawa. According to Iraqi media, another coalition convoy came under attack in the city of Diwaniya. American forces and other supply convoys have been targeted frequently in Iraq in recent months amid growing anti-U.S. sentiments in the Arab country. You can see the breaking news there coming from the International Criminal Court. The ICC has said that it's going to open a probe into the war crimes that have been committed in the Palestinian territories. Again, the ICC prosecutors making that announcement of how war crimes may have been committed, in which they are opening a probe to find out what they may be and whether they have been committed. We'll give you more on that piece of breaking news once we get additional details. But Baghdad-based reporter from IRIB Bureau, Naveed Behrouz, earlier joined us and gave us details about the latest attack on Ain al-Assad airbase in Iraq.
10 rockets of the Katyusha type were fired from the Al-Bayadur hit, which is located near this base. Those rockets were fired from that area and targeted Ain al-Assad airbase. 10 Katyusha rockets hit that base. Based on the incoming reports, they landed at the southern part of the airbase, that is where the dormitory of American forces is located, and immediately after the attack, we witnessed sorties and flights by American helicopters and aircraft over the Ain al-Assad airbase, and also columns of smoke were seen rising from Ain al-Assad base. The eyewitnesses are saying that so far no group has claimed responsibility for the attack, and this attack definitely was in response to an earlier attack last week by the U.S. against the popular mobilization units forces here in the same province, Al-Anbar province. It happened on the Iraqi soil. This attack is in response to that attack, and resistance groups had already announced that they would respond to the U.S. attack. So this attack is probably a response to the U.S. attack, and that proves that resistance groups have proved that they are capable of responding to American attacks despite all security measures adopted by the U.S. military in that area.
Iran's president says that there needs to be practical measures by all parties to the 2015 nuclear deal to preserve the landmark accord.
The European parties to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action say we must preserve the deal. Okay, if rhetoric helps, we say it louder. But with words and slogans, the standoff will not be resolved. The Americans are just paying lip service. They say they want to rejoin the JCPOA, but words are not enough. There must be actions.
Rouhani said the U.S. has not taken any considerable steps to remove its sanctions on Iran. He added that the current U.S. administration should strongly denounce its predecessor's actions against Iran if it deems them wrong. He called on Washington to return to his commitments under the JCPOA. Rouhani said the standoff over the accord can be resolved easily if the U.S. lifts all sanctions, and then Iran will return to full compliance. Former U.S. President Donald Trump walked out of the multilateral accord in 2018 and reinstated tough sanctions on Iran. A year later, Iran began reducing its obligations. Former U.S. Special Rapporteur Alfred Desaias says that U.S. President Joe Biden should lift sanctions on Iran to pave the way for reviving the JCPOA.
The withdrawal by President Trump in 2018, of course, violated the principle of good faith. It violated the principle pacta sunt servanda, meaning agreements have to be implemented. Now, in the spirit of the United Nations Charter, in particular, Articles 2, Paragraph 3, and Articles 2, Paragraph 4, what we need here is negotiation in good faith, and the Europeans want it. The Europeans want to maintain the agreement. It is entirely possible for President Joe Biden to lift the sanctions. So there's a nexus between sanctions and death, and that should be brought to the attention of world public opinion. It's not just theoretically saying sanctions are an unfriendly act. No, sanctions kill. We hear lip service from Joe Biden. I'm an American citizen. I asked Joe Biden to actually take action and lift the sanctions so that we can go forward with an agreement that was negotiated over a very long period of time, and an agreement that, in my opinion, makes a lot of sense.
Iran has lashed out at the United States after Secretary of State Antony Blinken accused Tehran of fanning the flames of the conflict in Yemen. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman rejected Blinken's allegations as baseless. Saeed Khatibzadeh added that Washington has committed crimes in Yemen by selling arms to Saudi Arabia, which the kingdom has used to kill civilians since 2015. He said the U.S. is playing a blame game to evade responsibility for such atrocities and to divert public attention. Khatibzadeh touched upon Iran's policy toward Yemen, stressing that there is no military solution to the conflict. He said that Iran will spare no efforts to help establish peace in Yemen and end the aggression against the impoverished nation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Hashtag Trending with me, Ali Rizzo. Today, we're going to be talking about the new revelations regarding the murder case of Jamal Khashoggi, a Saudi journalist who was brutally murdered at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul back in 2018. Stay tuned. An intelligence report released by the U.S. administration says Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved the assassination of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. Now, this is while the previous U.S. administration had a different story to tell. Let's go back in time and see what exactly they had to say about this murder case.
Yes, sir. You've seen all the intelligence, presumably. Do you believe that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia ordered Jamal Khashoggi's killing?
I do believe. I've read every piece of intelligence, unless it's come in the last few hours. I think I've read it all. There is no direct reporting connecting the Crown Prince to the order to murder Jamal Khashoggi. And that's all I can say.
We have no smoking gun that the Crown Prince was involved, not the intelligence community or anyone else. There is no smoking gun.
Now let's check out some tweets and reactions to this story, starting off with a tweet by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who describes the report as chilling. She wrote on Twitter, "The chilling report from the intelligence community confirms what the world has long known, that Jamal Khashoggi was brutally murdered at the direction of top Saudi officials, including Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman." Now, someone should probably ask Ms. Pelosi how she can find a long-known fact to be a chilling one. Did she not know about bin Salman's involvement in this murder case? Frank Amari comes out with a meaningful reply to her tweet. He said, "Replying to Speaker Pelosi, October 2018, blood on his hands, Secretary of State Pompeo shakes hands and smiles with Saudi Crown Prince in Riyadh. Just as Turkish officials say they found certain evidence, Saudi journalist was murdered." Now, our next tweet comes from Michael McKean. He wrote, "Really inspiring that two men of different religions have found common ground in immoral venality and grotesque political murder." Now, after the intelligence report was released, it was met with many, many tweets and reactions throughout social media. Many people have actually welcomed the report, while others have rejected it as just another fabrication attempt by U.S. intelligence agencies. The division between the supporters and the opponents of the report can be seen as a reflection of the widening gap between Riyadh and Washington. Our next tweet comes from Captain Cali Call You Out. He wrote, "CIA has a history of fake reports and letting other countries pay for it. Khashoggi's report has not a shred of evidence that MBS ordered anything. A bunch of assessments based on inaccurate infos and straight-up lies. You're doing it again, America." To which Code Pink replied, breaking. New court documents reveal that the jets used by Khashoggi's killers were owned by a company that Saudi Crown Prince MBS had seized a year prior to Khashoggi's murder. Hashtag justice for Khashoggi. And our next tweet comes from Nicholas Christoph. He wrote, the U.S. government publicly identifies MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, as the murderer of my friend Jamal Khashoggi. And then President Biden chokes and lets the murderer walk. This is a huge missed opportunity, I'm afraid. Now, some people on Twitter have questioned the Biden administration's true intentions behind this report and their relations with Saudi Arabia. They say that Washington's stance is akin to befriending a murderer. Our next tweet comes from Sarah Leah Whitson. She wrote, the Biden administration should move to apply the exact same Magnitsky Act sanctions on MBS, including a travel ban and freeze of his assets that the U.S. applied to his 17 accomplices for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Our next tweet comes from Aqili. He wrote, if we understand that he's a murderer, why are we still befriending the Saudis? We also know that they were responsible for 9/11. In the meantime, we isolate and bomb Iranian interests. We are hanging out with the wrong group on the playground, again and again. And our final tweet comes from Nicholas Christoph. He wrote, thank you so much. I am a Saudi citizen, and we really need your help. We have been suffering too much from systematic repression by the evil MBS murderer. Who is the enemy of this modern world? And with that, we have reached the end of today's episode. Let's get back to the studio, but that's been it for me. Until the next edition, take care and bye-bye.
Russian Islam is absolutely unacceptable. The latest sanctions the U.S. and EU announced over the poisoning of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. Kremlin said that the sanctions amount to interference in Russia's domestic affairs. Said that Russia will take reciprocal steps in a way that best serves its interests. Earlier, the foreign ministry also warned the U.S. not to play with fire. It said the sanctions were evidence of a hostile anti-Russian lunge. The U.S. and the European Union imposed penalties on a number of Russian government officials and entities on Tuesday. The two say the Russian government was behind the last year poisoning of Navalny. Moscow strongly denies that.
Relations between Moscow and Washington are deteriorating over the imprisonment and alleged poisoning of Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny. The U.S. has imposed sanctions on several Russian individuals and entities over the case. It accused the Kremlin of being behind the poisoning and renewed demands for Navalny's release. Washington says the move was taken in coordination with the European Union, which has already sanctioned four senior Russian justice and law enforcement officials. Prior to the U.S. announcement, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov had warned that his country will respond to Washington's sanctions proportionately. Analysts believe that the U.S. and its European allies are politicizing the case and are interfering in Russia's internal affairs.
This is an obvious case of blatant meddling in the internal affairs of the Russian Federation. And they have the European Court of so-called human rights has not given any justification except for political talk for why they made this decision.
Navalny was rushed to a local hospital in the Siberian city of Omsk on August 20th after collapsing on a Moscow-bound flight. He fell into a coma and was put on a ventilator in an intensive care unit. 2 days later, he was airlifted to Berlin for treatment. On September 2nd, Berlin claimed that German government toxicologists, after examining Navalny's test samples, concluded that he had been infected by a toxic agent belonging to the Novichok family. Moscow denied any involvement, saying it has been no proof Navalny was poisoned. It also said that Russian doctors detected no poisonous substance in Navalny's system prior to his transfer to Berlin. The Kremlin critic was arrested in January upon his return from Germany. Last month, a Russian court gave him 2.5 years in jail for violating a 2014 parole. The relations between Russia and the West have been thorny over a host of issues. Their ties deteriorated due to various sanctions imposed over Russia, citing its involvement in the crisis in eastern Ukraine and alleged interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. The latest pretext to target Russia by the U.S. and its allies threatened to take the relationship to a new low and fuel tensions further.
In reaction to the ICC opening up a probe in the Palestinian territories, You're seeing now a reaction coming from the PA, the Palestinian Authority, who has said that the ICC investigation will achieve justice and accountability, at least for the Palestinians. Let's hope so. Moving on with the news, French President Emmanuel Macron has admitted to the colonial-era murder of a top Algerian independence figure following decades of denial by Paris. Macron said the French forces detained, tortured, and killed Ali Boumendjel in Algiers in 1957 during Algeria's War of Independence. Macron, however, stopped short of issuing an apology. French authorities had previously claimed that Boumendjel had committed suicide while in detention. He was among some 1.5 million Algerians killed during the country's struggle for freedom from French rule. The eight-year war came to an end in 1962 after Algeria gained independence after over a century of French control. Earlier this year, Macron said that Paris will not apologize or repent for its atrocities committed during the conflict, but rather take symbolic measures aimed at reconciliation. Dutch police say that an explosion has hit a coronavirus testing center in a town north of the capital, Amsterdam. Authorities have cordoned off the blast site to carry out an investigation. Police say the explosion broke windows but caused no injuries. They say the incident is likely an intentional act. In January, another coronavirus testing center was set on fire in central Netherlands. That incident came after several nights of violent protests against tougher COVID-19 restrictions, including overnight curfews. Public anger has escalated this year against healthcare officials as well as the government handling of the pandemic. Media reports say that at least 9 people have been killed during the latest anti-coup protests in Myanmar, where the military has intensified its crackdown on protesters. Victims lost their lives in different cities. The deaths bring to 30 the number of people killed across Myanmar since the anti-coup rallies began early last month. The military alleged that November elections had been rigged. It detained the civilian officials, including the de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi and President Win Myint. The president is now facing 2 new charges. The junta has also charged 6 journalists over their coverage of the protest. On Tuesday, a regional diplomatic push to help end the month-long crisis made little headway. International human rights lawyer Edward Corrigan says that the charges leveled by Myanmar's junta against the ousted de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi are unfounded.
But these are trumped-up charges. They're baseless, and actually they're ridiculous. But, you know, the UN Security Council has not taken a strong stand. And we have to wait and see what the American and British and other Western corporations, if they think they can make money there. The junta wants to maintain the power that they've had in the past. They had held Suu Kyi in house arrest for 6 years. The Myanmar military is like a separate institution. It runs parallel to the government, but it's not really controlled by the government. And it's also one of the largest armies in the world, even though Myanmar is a relatively poor country. So the military has tremendous power and control. And I think they were shocked that Suu Kyi's party, the League for Democracy, National League for Democracy, had won a strong mandate in the elections that were held in November of last year. So they fabricate this excuse, as far as I'm concerned, that there was fraud in the election, but I've seen no evidence of fraud.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kHz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kHz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. The Limelight.
Supporters of a prominent Saudi Arabian princess detained with her daughter in Riyadh have appealed to the British government to help secure their release. In two letters to both Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab and Commonwealth General Secretary Patricia Scotland, the princess's supporters urged them to intervene on behalf of Princess Basma bint Saud bint Abdul Aziz Al Saud and her daughter Suhud Al Sharif, arrested in Jeddah 2 years ago. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Ruth Michelson. The piece is titled "Supporters of Detained Saudi Princess Call for United Kingdom to Help Secure Release." Stay with us for more of Ruth Michelson's article. Supporters of a prominent Saudi Arabian princess detained with her daughter in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, have appealed to the British government to help secure their release. In two letters to both Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab and Commonwealth General Secretary Patricia Scotland, the princess's supporters urged them to intervene on behalf of Princess Basma bint Saud bin Abdul Aziz Al Saud and her daughter Suhud Al Sharif, arrested in Jeddah 2 years ago. They said that the princess suffers from a heart condition that requires urgent medical treatment. "We believe her life depends on her release," said the family's legal advisor, Henri Estramont and Lucy Ray, of the British human rights organization Grant Liberty, in the letter. "We are begging you to intercede. As they are citizens of the Commonwealth, we believe you have a moral obligation to fight their corner," they wrote. The pair became dual nationals of Saudi Arabia and the island of Dominica, a Commonwealth nation, in 2015, after the princess applied for their citizenship by investment program. Princess Basma, the daughter of Saudi Arabia's second king and an outspoken human rights advocate, was detained in March of 2019, along with her daughter. The pair were arrested as the princess attempted to leave Saudi Arabia for Switzerland, where she was due to have medical treatment for her heart condition. Her private plane never left Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, whilst closed-circuit television footage obtained by Spanish outlet ABC shows 8 armed men waiting in the lobby of the princess's penthouse to detain her before covering the security cameras. The princess and her daughter were taken to Ha'er Prison, an infamous maximum security facility in Riyadh that houses an estimated 5,000 prisoners, including the activist Lujain Al-Hathloul, before her release this February. Al-Haflou, who was tortured in detention, remains banned from travel outside of Saudi Arabia. You will be aware that Al-Ha'er prison is a well-known hub for torture and abuse of prisoners of conscience in Saudi Arabia, Henri Stromont and Lucy Ray wrote to Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab, citing Princess Basma's ties to the United Kingdom, including her education at a school in Hertfordshire and a London-based research centre, Global United Research and Analysis. Both letters said the princess was likely to have been detained because of her past support for increased civil liberties within the Saudi Arabian Kingdom, as well as her close links to erstwhile Crown Prince Mohammed bin Nayef. Princess Basma's supporters asked both Dominic Raab and Patricia Scotland to raise Princess Basma's case with authorities in Saudi Arabia and use every diplomatic and legal tool at your disposal to force change. We believe that the Saudi authorities are particularly sensitive to diplomatic pressure at present, and we further believe that an intervention by you could make the difference, they added. It is unclear whether the Saudi Arabian authorities will acknowledge the dual citizenship of Princess Basma or her daughter. The kingdom's citizenship laws state that Saudis cannot acquire foreign citizenship without permission, and dual nationality is not recognized under Saudi Arabian law. The Saudi Arabian mission to the United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland, told the Working Group on Arbitrary Detentions last year that Princess Basma is accused of criminal offences involving attempting to travel outside of the kingdom illegally, and that her daughter, Suhud al-Sharif, was arrested for assaulting an agent whilst he was carrying out his duties, as well as cyber crimes. They added that the princess underwent a medical examination before she entered prison, and the pair were given necessary medical care whilst detained. Neither the princess nor her daughter have been officially charged with any crime, given access to a lawyer, or received a trial date. The Saudi Arabian Embassy in Washington, D.C. did not immediately respond when contacted for comment. According to Saudi Arabian law, Princess Basma and Suhud al-Sharif should already be out of prison, as no trial was scheduled within the maximum detention period of 180 days, Henri Stromont told The Guardian. To be taken seriously as a country where the rule of law prevails, they must follow their own laws. Moreover, we're still baffled by the lack of communication between the princess and her nuclear family, Stromont said, referring to long-time accusations that Princess Basma's family, that she has been denied phone calls from prison. Princess Basma is one of a number of senior Saudi royal family members who have been detained. These include Prince Ahmad bin Abdul Aziz and the king's nephew, Prince Mohammed bin Nayef, who were arrested last March. The pair reportedly remain under house arrest for their opposition to the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, popularly known as MBS, who has consolidated power within the Saudi royal family amid the arrests of large numbers of political activists in the country. Prince Mohammed bin Nayef was unexpectedly removed from the line of royal succession in 2017, when the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman replaced his cousin as next in line to the throne. The Saudi Arabian authorities are facing renewed pressure after the Biden administration declassified an intelligence report last week, which said the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved the operation to murder journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi Arabian consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, in October of 2018.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
قال الإمام الباقر عليه السلام بني الإسلام على خمس على الصلاة والزكاة والصوم والحج والولاية ولم ينادى بشيء كما نودي بالولاية.
Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam stated, Islam is blessed on five: prayer, alms, fasting, the obligatory pilgrimage or hajj, and the divine guardianship of the Imams from the household of the Prophet. And no other issue has been called for as much as divine guardianship.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. We find very beautiful conversations in the historical texts of the Muslims. Now, of course, conversations are one of the most common things in a human being's various aspects. Of course, we talk to each other. And so, just as we ordinary human beings talk to each other, the infallible imams also had beautiful conversations and dialogues with their respective companions. In the life of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, we also find these beautiful conversations that occurred between him and his companions. In one such conversation, dear friends, we find that Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon him, alayhi salam, he says, the best deeds are three: praising Allah in all conditions, treating people with justice, and giving the friend money. It's really interesting, but it is these kind of conversations in which we find some very interesting things. For example, we always kind of wonder, well, what are the best deeds? What are deeds that are highly recommended? What are things that we should be doing in order to, for example, increase our iman or make ourselves into better and more righteous servants of Allah? Well, here, Imam al-Baqir tells us some of these best deeds which can be done by a righteous servant of Allah. And so, first of all, he says, praising Allah in all conditions. Alhamdulillah, Subhanallah, Allahu Akbar. In all conditions, whether they are happy or sad, good or bad, up or down. And it's very interesting, but sometimes this very simple statement is very difficult to do. For example, when we are happy, we forget to praise Allah. And sometimes when we are sad, we forget to praise Allah. But as far as Imam al-Baqir teaches us, we should praise Allah in all conditions. And second, he says, treat the people with justice. It is easy to treat good people with justice, but it is difficult to treat bad people with justice. Regardless of whether they are good or bad, people should be treated with justice. And finally, giving the friend money. If we have money and we are capable of giving money, we should give money to our close friends when they are in need. Beautiful words brought to us in this dialogue by Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
The Ahlul Bayt's ethos was intellectual academic discourses which are based on a calm approach. The moment it gets physical, the moment it gets violence, that is not acceptable. Yes, we live, alhamdulillah, in a relatively free society in the sense that people are able to express their opinions and comments. Yes, but as followers of the Ahlul Bayt, we must not be able to allow our anger overtake us and just for the sake of the argument be able to somehow lose our cool. Yes, and that is why when we remember our fifth imam, we remember an important part of the recommendations of the fifth imam, which I would like to narrate for you in this regard, which he gave to his famous companion Jabir al-Ju'fi. He told him, the fifth imam, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi, to him, I'm going to give you tips, Imam al-Baqir says, things, remember them. In ظُلِمْتَ فَلَا تَظْلُمْ. If you are oppressed, don't oppress. Imam says, don't reciprocate injustice with injustice. Yes. Be the one who acts with righteousness, even though you are wronged.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Progressive anger and despair has escalated over the Biden administration's refusal thus far to make sure the $15 minimum wage increase remains in the bill as it heads to the U.S. Senate, says John Quayle, senior editor, in an article published under the heading Progressives Dismayed Over Biden-Harris' Unwillingness to Push $15 minimum wage. Stay tuned for more. After the Democrats in the House approved the far-reaching COVID-19 relief package early on Saturday, February 27th, with all but two members of the caucus on board, progressive anger and despair escalated over the Biden administration's refusal thus far to make sure the $15 minimum wage increase remains in the bill as it heads to the U.S. Senate. As journalist David Sirota, founder of the Daily Poster and former staffer for the 2020 Bernie Sanders presidential campaign, put it recently, if you were writing a Dickensian novel, it would be about millions of desperately poor people being promised a $15 starvation wage and then watching their millionaire senators tell them that a parliamentary advisor in the palace said no. While Biden and his administration have made clear they will not move to use Harris' authority as presiding officer of the Senate or to disregard or overrule the parliamentarian determination, the anger on the progressive left, both inside and outside of Congress, has only grown. Winnie Wong, political strategist and another Sanders campaign alumnus, said the choices for Biden and Harris are now quite stark and suggested the stakes are much higher than many top Democrats appear to understand or acknowledge. Recently, the national advocacy and organizing group Women's March tweeted, "The pandemic has disproportionately impacted women, low-income people, and people of color. Raising the minimum wage is COVID-19 relief. Addressing the issue on MSNBC, Representative Pramila Jayapal, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, said Democrats have no choice but to muscle it through the Senate given the campaign promises made to voters leading up to last year's elections. "We can't back to voters in 2 years," explained Geopal, "and say, you know, we made you a promise. You delivered us the House, the White House, and the Senate, but a parliamentarian told us that we can't do it." In a column recently, the New Republic's Osita Nowano argued that there is simply nobody but Democrats themselves to blame for failure to include the $15 minimum wage increase in the Senate's COVID-19 relief package. Not Republicans, not the Senate parliamentarian. Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and even Joe Biden are to blame for squandering their party's majority power, he wrote. According to Nowano, it has been written and said that the gambit failed because the Senate parliamentarian ruled that including the minimum wage increase would violate reconciliation rules. This is false. The Senate parliamentarian is a wholly powerless functionary who can be overruled at any time by the party holding the White House and Congress, both of which, as you might recall, are now controlled by the Democratic Party. The gambit failed because the White House and many Democrats in Congress opposed overruling the parliamentarian. As Common Dreams reported recently, a progressive coalition including One Fair Wage, Women's March, People's Action, Center for Popular Democracy, and dozens of others have sent a letter to Biden and Harris and are circulating a petition demanding that the parliamentarian guidance be disregarded so that the increase can be included in the Senate bill. As President of the Senate, Vice President Harris has the constitutional power to disregard the recommendation of the Senate parliamentarian and include this provision in COVID relief legislation, the letter states. Noting that the vast bipartisan majority of Americans support raising the wage, the groups tell Biden in their letter that he simply must rise up for the communities who turned out in record numbers to elect him and support the vice president in taking this action on behalf of his administration. While critics spend the weekend blasting the president and vice president for hiding behind the Senate rules, Nowano was among those who said an alternative path is clearly possible. If only Biden would fight, one thing Biden might have to voters, he said, in any of the domestic policy speeches and public statements he's made over the past month, is that the minimum wage and other policies are more important than the Senate rules and that the Senate rules should be changed to pass them, potentially giving Manchin and Sinema, who do not really care about raising the minimum wage but do care about being re-elected, an incentive to support raising the minimum wage and changing the Senate rules. Following the passage of the COVID-19 package in the House recently, Ben Jealous, president of the People for the American Way, applauded the approval and said now it is time for the Senate to complete the job. It's clear why the Senate must pass this bill. Families continue facing economic anxiety. Unemployment claims are skyrocketing and people are behind on rent and facing household hunger, said Jealous. Every element of this package is critically important and they must not be whittled down in the Senate. Therefore, we urge the administration and the Senate to do everything in their power to quickly pass the American Rescue Plan, including the $15 minimum wage increase to ensure Americans get the help they need. Representative Ro Khanna suggested there is no excuse for every single Democrat in the Senate not to get on board with the $15 wage that Biden vowed to pass throughout the election season last year. this issue a will, there will be the votes in the Senate on final package is pretty simple, Khanna said recently. If progressives can compromise and rally around the exact package President Biden proposed, is it not reasonable to expect every elected Democrat to do that? Khanna also appeared on CNN to discuss his position. Representative Roy Khanna on a $15 minimum wage hike provision in President Biden's COVID-19 aid package, there is still the ability to rule this in and have a vote on the package. Recently, Jayapal repeated her message that Senate passage must follow if Democrats want to fulfill the pledges they made to the American people. First, we promised workers that we'd give them a long overdue raise. Then the House passed a $15 minimum wage, she tweeted. Now the Senate must do everything necessary to urgently deliver. It's been 12 years since we've raised the minimum wage and 30 since we've raised the federal tipped wage at Jayapal. We can't keep kicking the can down the road as millions are pushed into poverty. In a crisis like this in the U.S., working people need all the help we can provide. Let's deliver.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kHz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. In continuing our discussion on the tradition of Imam Kadhim عليه السلام, in which he narrated to one of his close companions, Hisham, we have reached the 22nd section of this tradition. And as those who have been following it must have noticed the beauty of this tradition and the important ethical principles and the importance of the status of knowledge. Again, knowledge has many meanings. We don't want to get into that at this moment. But one of the most important meanings of knowledge and of the intellect, rather, which gains that knowledge, is the rational faculty that we as human beings have. The ability to understand principles, the ability to understand universals, and so on and so forth. Again, this is a discussion that, you know, requires a lengthy explanation from logic and philosophy, and we leave it to those who are more experienced and more learned than I. So in this section of the tradition, the Imam alayhi salam wants to indicate a particular person, a person who has intellect. And this is that the intellectual person knows which of the two sides of a coin to choose. Either he will choose wisdom, or will he choose this world? And obviously a person of intellect, a person with rationale, will obviously choose wisdom, for it is something that is of great benefit to him, both in this world and in the hereafter. So the Imam says that, O Hisham, one with intellect is pleased, but simple pleasures of this material world, on the condition that he has wisdom. If a person has wisdom, even if he has a very, you know, simple life, he is content by this wisdom, enables him to be content with what he has. One reason may be, it's because he understands that the risk and the sustenance and this life that he has been given comes from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So he's content with it. However, on the flip side, this very person with intellect, however, he is never pleased with simple wisdom just because he has the pleasures of the material world. He's not content with understanding simple things. No, he wants more. But not more in terms of the world, more in terms of understanding, of conceptualizing, of getting closer towards the truth, which is itself Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is why they have profited in the bazaar or in the marketplace of life, because they are seeking higher wisdom. Inshallah, until next time, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no
The debate.
Hello and a warm welcome to the debate. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Washington has placed sanctions on several Russian officials.